Hello, and welcome to another edition of Radio 201, the podcast from Benjamin Franklin High School. I'm your host, Angelo Fernando. And as you may have heard on previous podcasts, I occasionally interview some of my colleagues at the school. Now, as a teacher, I get to pick the brains of the brightest and the best. There was a time when I collaborated with science teachers at a workshop, a summer camp, really, in Payson, Arizona. Another time, I was at a workshop in Sri Lanka, during which I channeled, if that's the right word, teachers here in the U.S., and we did it via Skype. Come to think of it, channeled is the right word. But anyway, here at Benjamin Franklin High School, we do something called walkabouts. Walkabouts is a term used for letting teachers walk into another teacher's classroom and observe how it's done. So a math teacher, for example, can observe, say, an art class. A football coach can observe a philosophy class. You get the idea. Now, today, in fact, Coach Jeffries came to my class and was watching, you know, the proceedings, and I'm hoping he got something out of it. Anyway, last week, I did my walkabout in a science class. This was an elective science class, which was basically at 6:30 a.m. You bet it's a tough subject to wake up to, especially if you're a teenager. But really, on the contrary, it was not. It was actually a very exciting class. You'll hear in a moment why this is so. Now, the teacher I observed was Stephanie Quick. She's someone who's so fired up about a subject and someone who seems to have this encyclopedic knowledge of planetary bodies. Her students are really, really lucky. After the class, I asked Stephanie about her class, and I encourage you to please stick around to the end because I got an interesting sound bite or two, and I promise you won't be disappointed.
So when they first came in, it really was kind of difficult to get started because space, it can be something that a lot of people agree or disagree on. So truly it was spending that first week with my students just going over how it's okay to have an open mind, and I'm not asking them to change any of their beliefs, but just be aware that this does exist and there is science to, you know, kind of back up certain components. But again, I'm not asking them to change their complete viewpoints. It's just respect what's been done. The beginning of it, what we truly focused on was looking at the Earth, Moon, and Sun system. So learning what we could about our own planet in a very short period of time to then take that, and we talked about uniformitarianism, which is that thought that anything that happens on Earth should be applicable outside of our planet just based on how formation occurred with our solar system, with the Big Bang. So it was a lot of just kind of getting that foundation because they could understand the general concepts because that made sense. They'd touched on it in their previous sciences, but nobody ever dove deep into how things related and why, if you look at our solar system, all of the inner planets are terrestrial and rocky, but then we have that weird transition into like the gas giants, and they weren't ever really told why. So it was fascinating to kind of introduce them to that whole gravitational sorting, and when everything expanded, the most dense materials went closer to our star, kind of getting their feet wet.
Imagine they circled the black hole for 5 of their years. 10 years would pass elsewhere. When they got home, everyone on Earth would have aged 5 years more than they had. The crew of the spacecraft would return to a future Earth. They would have made a journey not only in space, but in time.
So if you took a phone, let's say phones worked, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And you hit your stopwatch.
Yep.
It would be 8 minutes.
Yes.
So, but you're saying that time goes slower. But
yes.
It doesn't, because it goes faster.
Well, think of it as a ticking clock. Like, 16 seconds ticking off over here. Their clock is ticking off and only gets to 8.
Yeah.
So it's like their clock, so to speak, is moving slower.
Yes.
What do you got? Yeah. Come on, throw some physics in here.
So say you go more with this black hole for 5 minutes.
So for example, one of the students brought up how they are able to look at the radiation emittance around the black hole to justify its presence with the matter and the antimatter and that collision that happens. And I know that that was something that was done, but this student who had just taken physics last year had more updated information than what I even had. So I humble myself when I come in because some of these students are really into it and they do their own background knowledge. And they do their own studying. So they'll go home and they'll look into it and just bring it back and share it with the class. So not only am I teaching them, they're constantly teaching me. And I like having more of a discussion-based class because it gives us a chance to have that more in-depth going through the little nitty-gritty and the what-ifs that I don't think you truly get some other times.
Yes, I heard one student, he was sitting up on the corner there, and he said he was quoting Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, he seems to have read 3 books on Stephen Hawking.
So the project itself, I told my students that instead of giving them what would essentially be our midterm, because it's only a semester class, that we were going to do a more intense research project. I told them it had to either be a spatial body or a spatial object, something that's been created. I had a couple of students that did things. I had one that did like Sputnik. I had another that did like Mars, more typical components. I had one that did Sagittarius A, which is, you know, phenomenal in its own right to have them think of that. But I did not give them any sort of list that they had to choose from. I just said, this is your parameters. You have to find something that meets these qualifications and let them just kind of do their thing. And it took them about like a week and a half of in-class time to do all their research. But some of their work, especially like Sophia's work with the Oort cloud, was phenomenal because there was just so much energy and passion that went into her project, and it's definitely something that she, one, was confident in, but was also just really excited to share something that she knew nobody other than her and I had ever heard about, because it's not something that would typically come up.
So let's hear from this student and what she did with this idea.
My name is Sophia Skiba. Okay, so my topic is the Oort cloud. And it's very, I don't know, like I thought it was a lot more commonly known, but it's not. And that's largely because it's theoretical. So basically, a Dutch astronomer, like back in the early like 50s or 60s, named Jan Hendrik Oort, he was a pioneer in radio technology. And one of the things that like he like found out using this like new radio technology was that there was the very large possibility of just this huge sphere of like made up of rocks, comets, ice, and like cold dust, just basically surrounding our whole solar system. And the thing is like, it is like way, 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 like way beyond kind of like Pluto. Imagine the solar system is the core of an apple, and then the rest of the apple is the Oort cloud. That's basically how it works. And the reason why it's only like theoretical is because while it would make sense for there to be like a whole bunch of, you know, more space debris beyond our solar system from, you know, all the kind of like the remains of that it didn't use when the solar system was forming, you know, it makes sense that there's out that all that stuff would be out there. It's just, since it's so far away, it's so hard for all of our basically telescopes to pick it up. And I thought that was kind of like weird, because I'm like, Hubble can pick up anything. But then I remembered, like, compared to a star, a rock is not bright at all. And so Hubble, if it's trying to look at the Oort cloud, it's going to miss it and instead pick up a bunch of galaxies and nearby constellations.
It gave me somewhat of an idea how to even structure this next quarter, because yes, there are certain components that I do want to accomplish, but I was able to see where they were most interested in, and it's amazing to see that they're looking at more of that more extreme theoretical end of things as opposed to things that are extremely common. So the fact that there is that curiosity still, I think is just a tribute to how some of the students are learning about science, because they are truly wanting to dig deeper. I am actively working with ASU in actually two different aspects. So one, I'm working with them directly so that I'm able to get my students some firsthand experience looking at different spatial components. I know that ASU has the largest meteorite collection of any university, which is pretty phenomenal. They also have the Marston, and I'm really hoping that we're able to get in and really just show them how space is truly an option as far as careers go, because I don't think that they know that that's really an option. And then I'm also working with ASU in a different program called XMAS. So we're part of 10 schools around the country, and essentially they'll be working with data that's been collected from various rovers and analyzing different pieces of lunar data and asteroid data to better understand and help cultivate the science community.
Some of you might be wondering, what might be the path of students in a field like this? Many students aren't sure what they are planning to do, and that's okay. Science, like the arts, opens their minds, our minds, and broadens our possibilities. But for students at least, this one knows exactly where her glide path is leading her.
After high school, I do really want to work with space, because it's like, if I don't, you know, work with space or like focus my entire like career on space, then like, what's the point of living? Because it's just, space is just so fascinating. So I really want to become an astronomer. So first obviously I'm gonna, you know, get a degree in physics, then slowly like climb up the ladder. I might be an astrophysicist, who knows? But I know any of the jobs I want will inevitably be connected back to space.
So here's the larger point I'd like to make. I've been involved in STEM for about 7 years, and it's taken me on excursions, detours is a better way of putting it, I guess, into space science and of course robotics. But I now see STEM less as a destination and more as an on-ramp. These students may or may not be donning lab coats and working at JPL or even Blue Origin, but these science fields that are drawing them to wrestle with complex topics like type 2 civilizations and black holes will give them one day that mindset to take on those new challenges that will present themselves. That's why we remind students of rejoicing in the challenge here at Benjamin Franklin, not only the day-to-day challenges of school and social life, but even those challenges we cannot yet see. So as I said at the top of this podcast, these walkabouts, these opportunities we have as teachers to walk into another class and just observe what's going on, this has been tremendous. It's, to me personally, I think this is a great, one of the greatest assets I've had working in this school. But apart from that, you also get to hear the voices of the students who are not in your class. You get to see the other, the rich diversity and the knowledge that's coming out of this school. So I really enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed hearing from them and hearing what goes on, like being a fly on the wall in another class. So on that note, we come to an end of another fascinating podcast. This is your host, Angelo Fernando, signing off for Radio 201. Thank you again for listening.